And so that's a question that we need to take back to organization, and we need to think about is like, do we build sort of a new sub-brand, or do we continue to invest in the master brand, but then making sure that the master brand can extend it to new associations. So
I'm Gabby Kustras, head of Global Marketing Events at Essilor, and we're here today at the Art Insights and Innovation event in Chicago with Marco Frin, CEO of Quantum, and Rogier Verhulst, head of market and product research, LinkedIn. Welcome.
Thank you.
Before we start, I do want to hear from you, who you are, and what you do, and then I have a couple of questions that cover your session from yesterday. Marco, would you like to begin?
Yes, well, thanks for inviting us, Gabby, and also ASMR, of course. So I'm the CEO of the CEO and founder of Quantum. Quantum is an analytics and AI-driven brand insights and strategy company. Most of our work is, I would say, in the brand space, but we do other analytics as well. I've been in marketing research and analytics for the past 30 years, and yeah, I've done a lot of different things. Written several books on marketing research and analytics, one actually with, together with Rogier, mm-hmm. called The Business of Marketing Research, available on Amazon.
it's
not that important, not important, but it's just a quick note. That's kind of like a quick summary of me.
Yeah, so I'm Rogier Verhulst. I'm currently the head of market research at LinkedIn. I've been in this space of data and analytics for about 25 years. I manage a team at LinkedIn. That's a central team. So we do a lot of research for our lines of businesses. So we have talent solutions, marketing solutions, hiring solutions, as our sales solutions, and then also our premium and sort of free LinkedIn product. What's unique about our team is that we have really broad sort of mix of skill sets. So we have people who can do data sciences, who are very technical, who can do data engineering, and so. And then we have the traditional sort of market research consultants who are doing the ad hoc research. But I think what's really nice about that sort of setup is it allows us to look at data much more holistically. So we can look at behavioral data, and we can sort of append that to survey data so that we can sort of get greater insights, if you will, and really connect kind of the attitudinal data with how people are behaving on LinkedIn. I've always been really fascinated and passionate about market research and analytics, and excited to be here. So thanks for having us.
Amazing. Now, LinkedIn came together with Quantum. You guys wrote a paper. You presented yesterday on stage, and you talk about a framework for AI-driven brand strategy. Can you give me a little bit of insight on what the paper covers and what you presented on stage?
Yes. So the paper has sort of like three components to it. One component is that, Quantum developed this brand methodology. It's called brand density. And the core of that methodology is basically one open-ended question. Like when you think about brand X, what comes to your mind? People just write down, if you do it in a survey, people just write down what comes to their mind. There are no limitations. It can be colors, it can be images, it can be attributes, it can be usage situations, anything that that comes to mind, they can write down. When we do this research with surveys, then we get this unstructured text data and we analyze that. And that's very useful, and we've had tremendous success with that. That's the framework. The reason why that framework is important is because it is a very well-supported, academically well-supported framework. There is a consumer memory theory that underlies it. There is empirical results that shows that particular brand metric is very highly correlated with market share. And there's also neuroscientific brain research that shows that actually these associations and these interconnectedness, which are part of the brand density, that they actually exist in the brain. So there's a lot of support for that framework. So that's the first component that we talk about in the paper. But when you do this for commercial situations like we did with LinkedIn, yes, you can do some of it with survey research, but sometimes you don't ask all the questions in the survey that you wanted to ask, and then the survey is already running, and then if we only would have asked this, then we could have done more. Sometimes there's just not enough space in the survey, especially if you want to look at multiple brands, if you want to look at the category, which is what we do. We don't just look at the brands, but we look at the category and how that overlaps. So if you want to do all of that stuff, and if you want to then also start, looking at like emotions that people have with brands, and if you want to start looking at pain points, for not just for LinkedIn, but for the competitors, it becomes the number of questions that you want to ask becomes too much for one survey. And that's where the AI component comes in. So that's the second part of our paper that we kind of like, we explained a little bit, we outlined how we use AI. And in our case, in our study, we used AI for two different purposes. We use AI to analyze the text data from surveys, but we also use generative AI to generate synthetic open-ended responses that then subsequently also get analyzed with AI. And that gives us really two different viewpoints of the market. We get one viewpoint via the surveys, but we get one viewpoint via ChatGPT. And they're both valid. They overlap a little bit, but they also give you different perspectives. And in our case, it really turned out that it gave us new and innovative insights. The third part of our paper was how we applied it for LinkedIn. And maybe Rogier.
Yeah. So what we really liked about this approach is that because the LinkedIn brand stands for so many different things, like we don't have the resources or the money to build new brands as we enter new markets and new businesses. And so the LinkedIn brand has to stand up for a lot of different value propositions, if you will. But what's neat about this methodology of brand density is it's a really broad approach because you're basically letting your target audience speak to how they perceive your brand. And so rather than doing what we've traditionally done is we've come with a battery of attitude statements. You can't just fit in as many statements as you think there's out there. And there's quite a bit of bias in terms of formulating what those statements are. And so now you're letting the data naturally speak to you, which gives you a much richer and broader set of things to explore around your brand that normally you wouldn't be able to get. And then with the large language models, we're then also able to look at not just our brand, but see how our brand sort of lives within this much broader category that it operates in. And so then that allows us also to understand where can we potentially grow the brand into, or what should we de-emphasize, or where we sort of stand up and stack up against the competition. And so one of the things we didn't talk about in the presentation yesterday is, but you can also sort of understand of the associations you're known for, who else is known for those associations, and how strong is the what we call mental availability for any given association. So then you can also sort of overlay that competitive lens of like, you know, yeah, you may be strong here, but everyone else is much stronger than you. So maybe you should look for other associations that are more differentiated, unique. But that's what we liked about this approach. And so far it's worked out well on the for the sales solutions business where we've implemented this. They are kind of on this track of like trying to find new territories that the brand can own that were very much in line with what we found in research.
I know that we're talking a lot about methodologies and the frameworks. Can we talk about some of the findings? Is it something that we can disclose to our audience, or some interesting things that you got out of this research?
Yeah, definitely at a high level. Of course, the actual results are confidential to LinkedIn. But shall I give it the first pass over here?
Yeah.
So one of the things, so to really explicate that, I know there's a lot of methodology, Gabi, but I think it's important for people who are listening to this to understand that the brand density approach is based on open-ended questions, right? Which is really, if you think about it, truly the voice of the customer. So you get a really good insight as to how that brand is represented in consumers' memory, and what is in there and what is not in there. And we do the same thing for the category. Now, one of the interesting things that we found was that if we did this for LinkedIn, you know, we found a set of associations, like for example, lead generation, CRM, trustworthiness, professionalism, right? Those are all things that are, you know, that LinkedIn is associated with. We do the same thing for the category. Now, one of the things that we found out was that there was one particular association that was very high in the category. And if you want to be strong as a LinkedIn brand, that same association should be very high for LinkedIn, but it wasn't. It was kind of like down the list. And so not that it was completely non-existent, but it wasn't as strong as it should be if you really want to make yourself relevant for that particular category.
The other thing that it sort of, I think the challenge for LinkedIn is that we have one brand. And so the ability to stand up for so many different aspects of, you know, the what we want, what we're trying to accomplish is just going to be really challenging. And so we understand that like creating like a product name brand, like Sales Navigator is one of the brands out there. We need to invest a lot more in that brand name for it to stand on its own. And so that's a question that we need to take back to organization. And we need to think about is like, do we build sort of a new sub-brand, or do we continue to invest in the master brand, but then making sure the master brand can extend it to new associations. So, but yeah, no, it was very insightful. I think the, you know, how we, the decisions we make are now much more, I think, informed by a much richer set of like insights that we previously just didn't have.
That's very interesting. So there's, in the beginning, you actually mentioned about synthetic tape. And you said it's one of the approaches that you used, and I can see the benefits from it as well. But can you first explain what is synthetic data? Because it is something that has been talked about a lot. We have a panel this afternoon as well.
Yes.
And it's been emerging more and more. And 2 days ago, we had a client summit over at the McDonald's headquarters, and we did bring up the subject, and all the brands that were there said, we're not ready yet to talk about this. It's very, it's in its infant phase, and we understand it, but we don't know how to use it.
Yes.
But I understand that in your situation, it's different.
Yes. So, well, first of all, synthetic data is can mean a number of different things, Gabi.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll try to explain it in maybe give an outline of what it is, right?
Okay.
So I'll start with what we did in our collaboration with LinkedIn. So if I want to know what LinkedIn is associated with, right? Of course, I can do a survey, and I can ask people, like, when you think about LinkedIn, what comes to your mind? And people write down what comes to mind. That's what we call real data, because people are writing something down. I can also use ChatGPT. And I can, for example, say to ChatGPT, like, well, when people think about LinkedIn, what associations do they have?
Mm-hmm.
And ChatGPT will give you a number of associations. Now, we do it a little bit more sophisticated than that, because you cannot just ask one question one time. You have to do it a number of times. You have to do it, you know, you have to introduce some variants. But that is called synthetic data. Now, in some ways, synthetic data is not completely the accurate term, because ChatGPT is a language model that is using the data from the internet, but the data from the internet is partially the result of people posting comments, people having discussions about brands, right? So it is not completely synthetic. It actually, there is some real data behind it. But what makes it synthetic, I think, and that, why people call it synthetic, is because that data that exists on the internet gets fed into a language model, which is in essence a predictive model, and that language model predicts not numbers, but it predicts, you know, associations or sentences, right? And that's why they call it synthetic. But it is not really synthetic, because it is derived from actual data that exists on the internet. And then maybe one additional thing, maybe that is too much detail for this particular interview, but ChatGPT is just one of the ways that we can generate synthetic data. There are other methodologies, like, for example, a technique called SMOTE, that we can actually use in survey data to generate synthetic data that is derived from survey data. And that's another way of synthetic data. Now, for the people you mentioned, people at McDonald's were still, you know, a little bit cautious about it. And I experienced that in my business as well, that some people, they want to try it. They want to do R&D projects with it. And some people are very cautious. They don't want to do it yet. But there are a couple of interesting points. I can give you one example. This is a project that I did for another social media company, where we had, and this case was very specific, we wanted to predict whether people were using one brand versus another brand.
Okay.
But the problem was that we had very little data for this one brand. And now if you do a predictive model and you're trying to predict which brand people are using, that predictive model will not perform very well, because you have skewed data. And there's too little data for that one brand. And so what we did was, we generated synthetic data to increase the number of observations for that minority brand, if you will. And then we estimated the predictive models. And it turns out that if you do that, those predictive models will perform incredibly well. And they will actually predict the real data. So even though you are making use of synthetic data,
mm-hmm.
you actually
mm-hmm.
end up with a model that predicts the real data much better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is really, I think, a proof point that synthetic data is actually working.
Yeah.
And that can also be one of the benefits of the
One thing to add to this is that what gave us a lot of confidence in the data was the fact that we had the luxury of a study that we ran sort of in parallel, both understanding category associations, but also we obviously have it with brand density. We actually asked the actual question to survey respondents, and we didn't share this in the presentation, but we also ran it sort of through the large language models. But
mm-hmm.
the results are fairly comparable. And I think, yes, there are some nuances. There are some things that ChatGPT picks up maybe differently than what you pick up in survey responses, but it doesn't necessarily mean because it's different that it's necessarily the wrong way of looking at it. And I think what you're getting with ChatGPT and the large language model is you get actually a much broader perspective than you could pick up in the surveys, because in surveys you're obviously talking to a representative sample, but it's hard to get a representative sample, and you may be missing certain groups that ChatGPT may actually be able to better pick up. And what's neat about ChatGPT and all the prompt engineering is you can imagine, you can put it in a situation of a particular group of individuals. You can say, I want to specifically learn more about, for example, sales professionals that are focused on lead generation or business development, etc. And so putting it in a mindset, you'll then be able to get much richer insights. And so, and what we also really like is the iterative procedures, right? And so, and we can take a lot of these insights and go back to our partners or stakeholders and say, is this, you know, this feels right. This feels like we can confirm this through, you know, other things we've seen. So,
yeah. And, but, you know, it is an emerging field. There's still a lot of new developments going on. There are different ways in which you can validate it, especially in our case. We had both survey data and ChatGPT data. So what you could actually do is you could say, like, hey, can I use the ChatGPT data to predict what's happening in the survey? And you can actually do that. So, you know, there was some validation approaches.
It's extremely interesting.
Yeah.
And the mix between the both using the AI technologies that we have today, but still not giving up on the traditional methods that exist, and see how they marry together. I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is that I think the future forward is sort of more of a blending. I think I don't think we're going to go 100% to synthetic data.
Mm-hmm.
I think there will always be a place for traditional surveys and doing sort of qualitative research, maybe at scale, but I do think that ChatGPT has opened up a whole new area for us to sort of enrich our understanding and supercharge our understanding of different markets and different topics that we're trying to explore.
Yeah.
But I do think that there, and I think what's also the future is, I think we're going to start to see companies building these smaller models that are more fine-tuned based on a particular audience, right? So you take the large language and you maybe fine-tune or train it on a particular audience so that it really understands that particular audience that you're interested in as a company.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gabby.
For being here today.
Yeah.